Hello and welcome to the new Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and my co-host Phil Jones, Managing Director of Brother UK, better known to the cycling community as Road Phil. Phil, good to see you.
Thanks, Tim, and I'm really excited that we've got this podcast together at long last, where we're really going to dive beneath the surface of what's really going on in the UK road cycling scene, bring some of the best riders, the best managers and the best personalities behind the sport, get them in the studio and start telling the stories about why this sport is so great in the UK.
Coming up in part one of our in-depth examination of British road racing, Eric Rousell, British Cycling's elite road racing manager, provides a detailed description of the need for change.
It's certainly recognised that there does need to be changes. A clear sign of that is the appointment of my role. I've not replaced someone. My role is a brand new role that's been invented basically by British Cycling because there's a gap there that needs filling. British Cycling does recognise that the need for some change, and it needs someone who understands the sport to do it.
Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK and this podcast's co-host, offers a hard-hitting commercial analysis of elite cycling's systemic challenges.
It's a boom-bust business model. That's always been my observation of this sport. Teams don't really have much else in the way of income streams other than a sponsor diving into their pockets and laying some money out. And that in itself can become a very sort of high-risk business model.
Peter Harrison, long-term organiser of the Cyclone Festival of Cycling, including the Beaumont Trophy and the Curlew Cup, warns that the future of domestic racing lies to a large extent in the hands of its participants.
We've got to have new young organisers coming through prepared to put on races because the appetite is there for the riders to race if we can get those organisers in. It's in the hands of the riders, I have to say. It's got nothing at all to do with BC. It's in the hands of the riders.
Larry Hickmott, founder and editor of Velo UK, argues that race organisers need more support if British Cycling's flagship National Road Series is to gain much-needed stability.
There is a great deal of uncertainty, I think, more so now than there ever has been. Every year we seem to go into this National Series wondering whether or not X event will be held. There are the long-standing events, which are fairly secure, but there are others that come on and then they disappear, and you never know whether or not they're going to be held.
And Jonathan Derling, Partnerships Director at Sweet Spot Group, organisers of the Tour of Britain, Women's Tour and Tour Series, argues that cycling's lockdown boom offers the sport new commercial opportunities.
We've now got a mini boom again in cycling, and that can only be a good thing. Obviously, on the flip side, the economy is struggling to say the least, and there will be less marketing pounds to be spent on sports sponsorship as a result. Are we in a stronger position as a result of COVID to appeal to brands who are looking at sports sponsorship? I think we probably are.
Hello and welcome to part one of this special investigative edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast. Coronavirus has affected every area of British life in 2020. While its impact on sport pales in comparison with the loss of human life, for those with an interest in British road racing, teams, riders, sponsors and organisers, the sport's continued lockdown in the UK has felt like the steepening of an already downward trajectory. The recent heyday of British road racing, when as many as six well-run, well-funded, British-registered UCI Continental teams raced with panache and success at home and abroad, already seems far distant. Sponsors have left, teams have folded, and some of the best-loved events on the domestic calendar are no longer held. This town, the specials might have observed, is becoming like a ghost town. So should we look ahead to 2021? With optimism or dread? What systemic weaknesses must be addressed and overcome if the sport is to thrive again? The pipeline of British talent has not run dry. The passion of our tireless race organisers still burns as brightly. And even the sport's often criticised federation has shown its appetite for change by appointing a young, dynamic, elite road racing manager fresh from the domestic peloton. In this opening instalment of our two-part investigation, we'll consider the challenge of race organisation, constructing a calendar, staging events and paying for them. In part two, we'll turn our attention to teams and riders. Each of our guides for this episode can be described without fear of contradiction as an expert in their field. Eric Rousell has been British Cycling's elite road racing manager since January. For six of the previous 8 years, he raced on British-registered UCI Continental teams. His two seasons with the pro-continental outfit NetApp Endura brought appearances in three Monument Classics, Milano-San Remo, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and the Giro di Lombardia. Eric knows what a bike race looks like from the inside and has a clear vision for domestic road racing, as we'll hear. Phil Jones is the managing director of Brother UK and this podcast's co-host. The architect of Brother UK's long-standing and comprehensive sponsorship of British cycle sport, Phil combines genuine passion for the sport with a hard-headed insistence on return on investment. Peter Harrison joined Gosforth Road Club back in 1961 and became organiser of the Beaumont Trophy in the 1970s. In 2011, he added the Curlew Cup to the club's portfolio, a National Road Series women's race that cemented racing's position at the centre of his hugely successful Cyclone Festival of Cycling. Larry Hickmott is the founder and editor of VeloUK.net, a website that serves as the heartbeat of domestic cycle sport. His vast experience and eyewitness view of seemingly every race in the country, no one works harder than Larry, more than qualifies him to comment. Finally, Jonathan Derling is the partnerships director at the Sweet Spot Group, organisers of the Tour of Britain, the Women's Tour and the Tour Series. Formerly a consultant to Skoda, he understands race sponsorship from both sides of the fence. Now finally, before we get going, Brother UK's strict adherence to government guidance on coronavirus and our unwavering commitment to COVID-secure environments and practices means that each guest for this podcast was interviewed remotely. Let's start by considering the scale of the challenge faced by British road racing. Although the focus of this episode is on race organisation and the structural concerns of a national series and calendar, neither can be divorced from financial realities or from the actors without whom the show would be dull indeed, the teams and the riders. In short, no aspect of British road racing acts in isolation. As Phil Jones explains,
there's a lot of interdependence on all of these things. Teams need sponsors, and sponsors need platforms, and platforms need races, and races need organisers, and organisers also need to find funding. They also need to, of course, have the full support of the federation. So there is a great interdependency on these things. So now, of course, we are entering into quite a difficult environment financially for everybody, because, of course, we were in our post-COVID world where businesses now are having to make lots of decisions about their future and possibly reducing the amount that they spend. You've got teams who naturally continue to look for new sponsors, but of course part of the sponsorship roadmap is, of course, you've got to have a race program and therefore a platform for a potential sponsor to amplify their messaging. So of course, in the absence of racing, the absence of that platform, the teams are going to find it very, very difficult to attract new money.
Finance, investment, sponsorship, call it what you like. Elite level cycling costs money. Staging a bike race on the public highway requires more time, more people, and more permissions than holding a football match on public ground, for example, or even a tennis tournament at a private club. For Larry Hickmott, who's seen more bike races than most of us have had hot dinners, the most important ingredient in a recipe for renewed success is obvious.
I guess it'd have to be money. The cost of putting on races has just gone through the roof over the last 20 years. You know, I go to time trials and other club races and look at the number of vehicles on the road. I think there are too many different elements for there to be one magic bullet, but certainly money does talk in being able to get the infrastructure in to be able to put a bike race on a closed road.
Peter Harrison's Cyclone Festival of Cycling must be the largest cycling event in Britain run by a volunteer organiser. The cost of staging 4 days of closed road challenge rides and racing from the urban streets of Newcastle city centre to the beautiful Northumberland countryside is not cheap.
It's about between 1900 and 10,000.
Say that again, Peter.
It's about between 1900 and 10,000.
The scale of Peter's achievement in raising six-figure sums by selling the social benefits of recreational cycling and the thrill of bike racing to corporate backers, including Northern Rock and Virgin Money, should not be underestimated. Peter has succeeded on charisma and contacts, but even he acknowledges that the fight has been tough and, post-COVID, is likely to get tougher.
It goes right across the board, this, and it goes back to this whole pandemic thing, and nobody at the moment, least of all the government, knows what's going to happen. But I feel sorry for people like, well, my timing company that I use, they've got no income coming in this year because they've got no running or cycling events to time. It's going to be interesting going forward into next year as to who will come on board, if anybody knew, whether they've got an appetite for it or whether they want to boost themselves and seem to be doing something back.
Paying close attention to the UK and global economies is literally part of the job for Phil Jones. Leadership of a major business like Brother UK requires a keen understanding of financial trends. Like most business leaders, Phil deals in economic realities, however harsh. Cycle sport, he warns, must prepare for a chilly economic climate.
I think it's going to be very, very difficult. I really do. You've only got to start seeing now some of the results announcements that are coming out from businesses. And of course, you know, teams and race organisers are generally looking to business. There's very few philanthropists around that are sort of just chucking money at the sport because it's their hobby. Ultimately, it's businesses that are funding the sport. When you're seeing some of these results being announced, you can see the very large impact that COVID has caused them. And you can see, you know, financial impacts of some good cases, maybe 15% reduction in sales, 50% reduction in profits, and in some bad cases, you know, 70% reduction in sales and closure of the business.
Phil's analysis is borne out by Peter Harrison's experience, an entrepreneur who has run several businesses in Newcastle and who worked for 2 decades as an executive at Madison, title sponsor of Eric Rousell's now defunct Madison Genesis team. He has a keen understanding of how wider economic shifts affect cycling, and first-hand experience of the often frustrating search for sponsorship in a post-COVID economy.
I mean, I've talked to, you name it, from Greggs right the way through to financial institutions, the whole gambit, trying to get them involved in the event. There was a couple this year, just before the pandemic, I was talking to an energy company who wanted to make bigger inroads in the area, and they're an energy company that focused very much on the green side of energy, and I thought they had that in the bag. And then, of course, the whole pandemic thing kicked off, and companies are, let's face it, are going to be scaling back their marketing budgets because some of them are going into financial loss or certainly massively reduced profits. Maybe it's my inexperience of not being someone who's a commercial marketeer, although I would like to think I can afford a good pitch.
Someone who is a commercial marketeer and who certainly can deliver a pitch is Jonathan Derling, Sweet Spot Group's partnerships director and a sponsorship consultant to leading brands, including Skoda. In 2016, Jonathan brokered Sweet Spot's 3-year agreement with OVO Energy for title sponsorship of the Tour of Britain, the Women's Tour, and the Tour Series. He too maintains a close analysis of economic trends. While he isn't blind to the economic impact of the pandemic, he sees reasons for optimism in one of the bigger trends of lockdown.
We've now got a mini boom again in cycling, and that can only be a good thing. Obviously, on the flip side, the economy is struggling to say the least, and there will be less marketing pounds to be spent on sports sponsorship as a result. Are we in a stronger position as a result of COVID to appeal to brands who are looking at sports sponsorship? I think we probably are, because I think we can play on the community angle, the health and well-being angle, the cycling boom. What it needs is organisations like us and our colleagues around the world to become a lot more digitally savvy and to be able to offer opportunities to brands that they can find elsewhere in other sports. And I don't think we're doing that necessarily at the moment.
Phew. If you weren't already convinced that there are no free lunches in domestic road racing, you must certainly be by now. And while we could devote the rest of this episode to contemplating tough economic certainties, let's lighten our spirits with some positive news. British Cycling will host a National Road Series next year. How can we be so sure? Well, we have it on the best authority, Eric Rousell, the Federation's elite road racing manager.
I'm confident we will have a national series next year. I think it will look quite good. I've been working very closely with a lot of the organisers. They're all really engaged still. They're all really, you know, enthusiastic to get going again. And everyone wants to get bike racing happening again. And I'm quite confident we will have a good national series next year. It won't be what our aims are for the future. That won't happen next year, you know. But I think going through what the country and what the world's just gone through, to have bike racing at that level next year is a big achievement in itself. You know, we could be in a situation where most organisers or authorities or sponsors just say, you know, we've taken such a big hit this year, we're just not even going to attempt it for next year. So the fact that we're having these conversations about racing for next year is already a positive given the climate we're in, I think.
We've started this section of the story at the end. How Eric Rousel and his colleagues at British Cycling have fashioned a National Road Series for 2021 must be at least as interesting as the pledge that they've done so. For a start, Eric has forged new working relationships with disaffected race organisers. No small achievement, given the standoff that surrounded a disagreement over branding rights at National Road Series events that delayed publication of the 2020 calendar until March of this year. We'll hear more of this later. Peter Harrison, vastly experienced and no stranger to British cycling, approves of its new man.
Well, Eric has been doing a good job, in fairness. I mean, Eric's got involved in our national organisers group and funnily enough, been having regular telephone conversations with Eric. He is listening to the riders. He's been along to a meeting we've had with national organisers and he's prepared to listen and he's putting the point of view forward to those in the organisation who don't know about cycling at that level. Eric's a very good ally and is doing a lot.
So what exactly is Eric doing? The scope of his role involves nothing less than reimagining the structure of British road racing, up to and including the flagship National Road Series. So what changes does Eric have planned? And what purpose does he believe the domestic road scene should serve?
The key thing to remember here is that the National Series should be seen as a development series. It should, in my eyes, be there to help progress British talent to move on to bigger and better things. What was needed, in my opinion, was someone that understood the sport, the way the bike races, you know, happen, what riders need, what teams need. If we're saying it should be there for developing riders, then, you know, someone that understands what do riders need to develop, what do teams need to develop riders. There's 101 other different things that all play into this as well, but the recognition that someone that knows the sport is needed. Effectively, my idea in the future would be a three-tiered approach for a top series consisting of UCI events, a middle series, if you could use the old name Premier Calendar, and the new under-23 development series as well that sit below that. And the key things would be the calendar spread and the geographical spread of those events. If I could paint the perfect picture, that's what I'd like to try and achieve. It's a huge task. I think if the appetite's still there and people still want this racing in the UK and we've still got the rides and teams that are wanting to do it, then we will do our best to make it happen as well.
Eric's vision for the development of domestic road racing and the riders within it is coherent, sincerely held, and based on 8 years' experience as a professional rider. He's clearly given careful consideration to fine detail, like the race classifications that would underlie a tiered approach. Is there a broader consideration of the purpose a National Road Series should serve, however, beyond merely developing riders? Should it be a national showcase to rival the Tour of Britain? A guaranteed passport to the UCI World Tour? Is it even necessary? Or has the reinvigoration of club time trials under lockdown shown that grassroots can rival razzmatazz? Here's fellow UK's Larry Hickmott.
Because we've missed the National Series this year, basically the sport seems to be missing that top level, that excitement. That said, having spent the last month since racing's returned going to events which are club races and events, there is a great deal of happiness, joy, whatever, at racing returning. I mean, you know, I look at the result and I know where people live and I see where they're racing. So they're obviously traveling quite a distance just to pin a number on. So racing obviously is important to them. So you have that two levels. You have the grassroots racing simply because people just enjoy racing and getting that competitive spirit out. But when it comes to the National Series, that's more of a business. You know, there's a lot of pressure on riders to perform in them. The problem there is that whereas the Tour of Britain and even the national championships to a certain extent could help get a rider a contract in Europe, as Roy Townsend's found winning three events last year, winning national series events, whether it's male or female, does not necessarily get you a contract with a big team in Europe. The difference between the Tour of Britain and a Prem is simply the riders competing in it. Domestic race is simply going to have British team riders, whether they come from Australia, New Zealand, America, wherever. It's still dominated by British teams. Pro teams in Europe aren't going to be looking at riders and what they're doing here. Whereas the Tour of Britain, if you do a good performance, such as the likes of Matt Holmes and James Shaw in the Tour de Yorkshire, they've done top 5, top 10 overall. That shows their potential, which has perhaps helped them get the spots in World Tour teams that they have managed to do. I still think it's an important part of that stepping stone to Europe for riders to be able to show their potential and give themselves their own morale boost to know that they can do this. If we lost the National Series, it would be a huge thing. It would obviously affect bigger teams, the UCI teams. Those teams would perhaps fall by the wayside. And I think that would be a detriment to the sport. The ladder to the top would stop a lot earlier if we lost the National Series.
Larry's fears are justified. This year's National Road Series seemed imperiled even before the pandemic, due to the late publication of the calendar and British Cycling's decision to abandon television coverage of its flagship road series. But Eric's appointment has reassured many, not least the race organisers. His vision for a three-tiered national series will not be delivered overnight, but its effect could be transformative.
My opinion and my direction that the National Road Series should take in the future is potentially it needs to be a tiered approach. Imagine a pyramid, and at the top you've got, you know, the Tour of Britain and Tour de Yorkshire, you know, Ride London, those sort of events sit at the very top of the pyramid. And then below that, we've got one UCI 0.2 event, which is the Seacle Classic. And then below that, you've got the National Series and then National Bees. There's quite obviously some gaps there that we could fill. Your Conti team, you can ride the top races and you can ride the Seacle Classic and the Premier Calendar. But if you're an elite British team, you can't ride those top races as well. So all you have access to is the National Series or National B events, unless you've got the money in the budget to go and do UCI events abroad. So I think the future we need to look at is a more tiered approach to this, where there's potentially three different series. There could be a top one, something in the middle, and then potentially much more of a development series that sits below it. And I think that could then provide more certainty to teams that we think, right, we know what we're competing in, we're aiming for that series, we can win in that, we can potentially have some exposure in the next series. It sort of gives a little bit of direction of where the teams almost sit and what would be there for them, rather than at the minute it's sort of one suits everybody, which is not what we've got in the UK. And that's almost the beauty of racing in the UK. We've got completely different circumstances. You've got someone that, you know, might work as a postman that's racing one week, and then you've got a rider which might be paid 40 grand racing the same race the next week. And we've got to try and develop a calendar that suits everybody, which is very, very tricky. But my idea is that we separate things out a little bit and have a bit more of a tiered approach to it, rather than just relying on one thing for everybody. The ideas and ambitions are big. You know, they're going to be long term. They're not going to happen this year. Everything's not going to happen in one go next year. It's going to be a phased in approach where we map out what we want to get to, but it's going to take some time to get there. We can't just click our fingers and change everything overnight.
Eric's vision for a tiered structure will have the greatest impact on teams, and so it's one we'll examine in greater detail in part two of this episode. That Eric even has a vision, however, and is determined that his appointment will bring necessary change, is to be welcomed. His insistence that change will take time to implement is to be respected too, but that time will pass quickly. The commercial landscape changes rapidly indeed, and once sponsors are lost, they can be hard to regain, as Phil Jones explains.
The worst thing that I think anyone can ever do is lose a sponsor, in the same way that with my business hat on, we all know that the cost of acquiring a new customer is far more expensive than the cost of keeping a current one. When a sponsor sort of walks away from a sport, to bring them back, I think is quite hard, because of course what you're then doing is sort of challenging a decision. And if that decision is a sort of a fairly recent decision, then generally speaking, I think it's unlikely that somebody's going to review that position in the short term. The trick now has got to be how the sport finds ways to ensure that the sponsors that currently exist in the sport stay in the sport and stand at the side of the sport whilst it's going through this really, really difficult period. And that's going to mean that they've got to be talking with their sponsors very, very regularly and finding new ways to activate sponsorship and add value. Looking outside in, you can see that BC are going to have a few challenges ahead themselves, because they have recently lost, I believe, their major sponsor. They've got a job now to go away and find a brand new big ticket sponsor to help with funding, which will be part of their headache that their commercial teams are going to have to land a big fish.
Landing big fish might almost be Jonathan Durling's job description, and two of the biggest he's landed for the Sweet Spot Group are Skoda and OVO Energy. It's hard to imagine two more distinct businesses, yet sponsorship of bike racing generated return on investment for both. So how was it done?
OVO were a young company
who needed really to build the brand awareness, we tick that box very well, especially as there are some brand values that were shared between Ovo and ourselves, principally, you know, around sustainability. We work with Skoda, and Skoda, as much as brand awareness is important, most people have heard of Skoda. What they want to do is sell cars, funnily enough, but they want to also start to position the brand in a different way and to different audiences. So if we're going old school and you've got the purchase funnel, awareness at the top, sales at the bottom, consideration in the middle, brands can sit at the top, can sit at the bottom, can sit in the middle, and it's my job and our job as a team to try and convince them that we can address and answer those objectives that they've got, which in some cases is easier than others. With someone like Ovo, it wasn't a difficult conversation. They wanted to increase their brand awareness. Cycling and cyclists were an important audience for them, and clearly that's something we can do very well.
Jonathan's marketing funnel is perhaps the only old school piece left in cycle sports sponsorship jigsaw. Bike racing's value to local authorities in particular has evolved in the 15 years since Sweet Spot Group revived the Tour of Britain.
We're now moving into cycling, not as a sport, but also as a method of transport. You know, active travel is high up on the agenda, health and well-being. And what we can do as an event to help a local authority inspire and motivate their communities off the sofa onto bikes or any form of exercise. So I now have conversations with directors of public health. We wouldn't have had those conversations 2 or 3 years ago. Now it's a fairly common conversation. You know, an important objective for them is a more active community, and what can we do to help? And I think what's been interesting is it's not just what we can do, but it's what cycling can do and the world of cycling. So we start to include conversations with people like Bikeability, with British Cycling, you know, who we work very closely with. There's a great need and feel for collaboration amongst everyone involved in cycling and how we can all help local authorities engage with their communities. It's a really interesting time to be involved, actually.
If we seem to have veered a long way from bike racing, then it's worth reminding ourselves that events on the scale of the Tour of Britain, and even the races in the National Road Series, demand substantial investment. Bike racing's ability to serve a range of agendas, from economic regeneration to public health, is highly significant. The new frontier of cycle sponsorship lies in community engagement. Nothing brings people together like a bike race, after all. Phil Jones recalls the Tour of Britain's denouement last year in Manchester, Brother UK's hometown.
I think they showed what could be done. That was the reason why the race actually went through every single borough of Greater Manchester. Everybody got the race in their particular borough, which I thought was great. But of course, it was well supported. There were hundreds of thousands on the street, people that would not normally be watching, cycling on the street, out in there, hundreds of thousands. I watched the race depart in Altrincham. In fact, I rode on my bike just a few days ago under the Mile Zero Bridge. And it always reminds me when I ride under it of, you know, what a great day that was for Altrincham, to see town centre packed with thousands of people, the coffee shops full, the bunting. And it just did a brilliant job to put sort of Altrincham on the map. It actually came very close to Brother UK as well, and which was lovely. Then it finished, of course, on Deansgate in Greater Manchester. And having been at the race in the morning, I shot to see the finish as well. And there literally were hundreds of thousands in the city. Beautiful day. The bars, it really was. It was a day to remember. I can still remember it very, very vividly.
Days like the Tour of Britain's visit to Manchester last year are those where every piece of the bike racing jigsaw falls into place, commercial and sporting. Matthew van der Poel sprinkled World Tour stardust all over central Manchester's Deansgate with a dazzling sprint victory, while the race's major backers, corporates like Brother UK and councils in the shape of the combined Greater Manchester Authority, could reflect with pride on having brought the race to Manchester, its city centre and its 10 boroughs. People came out in their hundreds of thousands and went home happy. This last element, community engagement, might just be the most powerful of all, as Jonathan Durling explains.
The final stage of the Tour of Britain last year was an extraordinary success. You know, we took the race through all 10 boroughs of Greater Manchester, which got all 10 boroughs working together, which they'd never done before on that scale. We had a debrief afterwards, and what we found was that people were writing into their local authorities saying, thank you for bringing the race. Local authorities never get emails like that. They never get a thank you. It's always a complaint. So they sort of were digging into this, and almost all 10 boroughs had the same message, which was the community bonded. There's no other event that can do it. The only one would be was when the flame was, you know, the Olympic flame was going around the country. You get people coming out of their front door, standing on the side of the road for maybe 20 minutes waiting for the race to come through or waiting for the flame to come. And talking to their neighbours. If our event can improve community engagement and community relationships, it's a positive. You know, the local authority can then see the benefit of that further down the line. There is a financial argument that if we can get 10% of the population on bikes and more active, further down the line there will be a cost saving to the NHS or to other cost centres. So it's up to me to kind of make the argument. It is stark, and there are times when you just know now is not the time. One of the reasons that the Tour of Britain, we postponed it when we did, because you know, in the general scheme of things, you know, when people are fighting for their lives in hospitals, it is only a bike race.
COVID-19 prevented the National Road Series even from starting this year, and at the very least, its spectre is likely to hang over the sport in 2021. The only upside of the pandemic has been the enforced opportunity to reset. We've heard already how Eric Roussel intends to restructure the National Road Series, but are the greatest challenges beyond even his control? For Larry Hickmott, domestic road racing's biggest challenge lies in ensuring a succession for the sport's influential but ageing nucleus of race organisers.
Everything is interlinked, but for me, organisers are the most important. This year we lost Mike Hodgson, who for years and years and years put a lot of his own money into the Tour of Reservoir, made the Tour of Reservoir a race for both men and women. He was a really passionate guy about the sport. What happens to his event now, it's been part of the national series for so long, is a worry, because we don't know whether or not there'll be an organiser that will come in to step into his shoes and keep the event going. And the organisers have so much experience how to get these events on the road, which is, you know, no mean feat. If the organisers are there and they organise the events and they know how to deal with BC and all that sort of stuff, then the riders will come along and race them. I think it's a huge challenge. And I think there is a big danger out there. I look at the organisers, and no offence to them, but like me, they are all getting on a bit. There are the younger organisers like Richard Williamson and Mark Etches, to name but two that come to mind. But I think in order for the sport at that level to continue, it's almost as if the older organisers need to be mentors to younger people wanting to keep the sport alive, having someone to go to, you know, learn the ropes, basically.
Peter Harrison might be taken as Exhibit A. He joined Gosforth Road Club back in 1961 and has organised the Beaumont Trophy since the 1970s. He's grown the Cycling Festival of Cycling around it and added the Curlew Cup, both huge achievements. But realistically, how long can Peter and his wife continue to run an event that attracts up to 4,000 amateur riders? Professional fields that have included Sir Bradley Wiggins and Lizzie Dugnan.
It has been getting tougher and tougher, I must admit. You know, given that I'm still running a business and I've got other things in my life, as well as being chairman of the Gosforth Road Club, it does take up a bit of time, and I'm not getting any younger. Between me and my wife, she deals with all the logistics side of it with regards to the payments coming in, by cross-referencing it to the entries, by sorting out the entries, all of this. Probably, depends on the time of the year, but anywhere between about, let's say, 15 and 30 hours a week.
For the avoidance of doubt, that's between 15 and 30 hours a week, every week of the year. A commitment spawned not only by a bike race, but by an entire cycling festival. And in case there was any possibility of a quiet weekend, Peter also organises Gosforth Road Club's Sloan Trophy, a regional A race that, in this extraordinary year, was massively oversubscribed. He's not afraid to call on others to step up and lend a hand.
We've got to have new young organisers coming through prepared to put on races, because the appetite is there for the riders to race if we can get those organisers in. As an example, the Sloan Trophy I put on a regional A 234. I opened entries on, I think it was my birthday, the 15th of January, and the race was due to be scheduled in April. I had a full field within the first 2 weeks. Not only a full field, I had 70 more riders apply. So in other words, I had 160 riders apply for 90 places. So it's not struggling in that respect. Where we are struggling is, I can go back to regional level on this, it's in the hands of the riders, I have to say. It's got nothing at all to do with BC. It's in the hands of the riders. I believe that we've got 92 registered clubs in the northeast region, and there's only about five or six clubs who are putting on races. There's no easy way of saying to a club you've got to put on a race or your riders don't get a ride in any other races. That's the old carrot and stick. That's not going to work. It'll come to the realisation this year, maybe it is starting to come to realisation now by some riders, that if they don't start to help, the races are going to disappear even more so than they are at the moment. You used to be able to race from March through until October, every weekend, possibly even a midweek race, and you'd probably ride a track league as well at one of the nights. So there was all those races, and they've reduced right down now. I mean, really scaled back. And this is why the races that are being put on, why riders are scrabbling for places, because there's so few for them to ride. So in that respect, it is in the hands of the riders.
The ladder to the professional ranks, represented by the National Road Series, is secured on the bedrock of grassroots racing. Peter is living proof, organiser of a regional A race, open to dedicated amateurs and juniors learning their trade, and a national A race, used by Sir Bradley Wiggins in 2009 as final preparation for his breakthrough Tour de France. The piling of so much administrative weight on so few shoulders contributes to the instability of the National Road Series calendar, Larry believes.
There is a great deal of uncertainty, I think, more so now than there ever has been. Every year we seem to go into this national series wondering whether or not X event will be held. There are the long-standing events which are fairly secure, such as Peter Harrison, such as Bob Howden's, ones by Richard Williamson early season, but there are others that come on and then they disappear and you never know whether or not they're going to be held.
The uncertainty, Larry describes, was exacerbated this year by a significant delay in publishing the National Road Series calendar. Last year's calendar was published on the British Cycling website on December the 19th, 2018, 4 months before the first race. This year's calendar, by contrast, wasn't published on the website until March the 6th, 2020, just 6 weeks from an opening event that was eventually postponed for lockdown. Peter Harrison says the delay was caused by a standoff over branding rights at National Road Series events between British Cycling and the National Organisers Group. With sponsorship already hard to find, and organisers of events worthy of a national series having to raise tens of thousands of pounds, it's easy to see how an issue seemingly irrelevant to the spectator can have a profound effect on whether or not events take place.
We hadn't got a structured calendar as such. Nedic was just coming into the job, and we were asked to sign a contract, which had never had to do in the past. There was various things in it. As national organisers, I won't go into the nitty-gritty of it, but we weren't happy with and we weren't prepared to sign. So that was a delay in why the calendar came out. We had to turn around to BC and say, look, we are the organisers. You don't own our races. We own our races. Yes, we're running under British Cycling regulations, but at the end of the day, it's we as organisers who own the series. It's not BC that own the series. It took a bit of understanding on BC's part to get their head around this. The HSBC on all national series races demanded 50% of the branding, which they did have. On the podium, the finish barriers, etc. Obviously not on social media, but we had to use their terms there whenever in social media, whenever we're talking about our events. So therefore, trying to sell our event to potential sponsors, we had to turn around and say, well, yes, thanks for coming in as headline sponsor. That's great. Really appreciate it. Oh, by the way, you've only got 50% of the branding if you're the sole sponsor. If we've got a number of smaller sponsors, it's going to reduce down to maybe 70 or 80% of the 50%.
While Eric points out that the dispute began before his appointment, he understands that British Cycling's insistence on branding rights for the series title sponsor were no greater than before.
I can't talk too much about before I joined because I don't know all the ins and outs, but I think if you go back in previous years when British Cycling have had other sponsors on board, the National Series has had other sponsors. It's had Motorpoint as a sponsor. Previously, when Sky sponsored British Cycling as well, they took part of the rights as well. So it's not a brand new thing that's come in. I think it's probably just been policed a bit more strictly, possibly, in recent years, with HSBC being such a big sponsor, with putting in so much funding.
Next year, HSBC will cease to be a sponsor of British Cycling, big or otherwise. As this podcast went to press, the Federation announced that the partnership would continue into 2021, having announced in February that it would end this year, 4 years ahead of time. It's unclear how British Cycling will replace the bank when it leaves after next year's rescheduled Olympic and Paralympic Games. A statement on the Federation's website talks of a changed relationship and a coalition of businesses, and promises further details on its partnership plans for 2021 in due course. With CEO Julie Harrington departing next January, the Federation is facing significant change. Whatever the outcome of changes to its leadership and key commercial partnership, Peter Harrison warns that the National Organisers Group will not accept the terms of sponsorship agreements for National Road Series races offered by the Federation to its previous title sponsors regarding the percentage of branding rights and the types of businesses that organisers can attract.
From next year, we don't know what negotiations BC are having with potential sponsors, if any at all. I must say, particularly with Julie Harrington leaving, whether they're going to get in a commercial sponsor. But one of the things is, as national organisers, we are saying is, look, we are not going to be hamstrung about who we can have in as sponsors for our races. If you want us to go ahead as a national series and we are able to pull in sponsors, we're not going to have BC dictating to us that, no, you cannot have this branding, you cannot have that branding, or this sponsor or that sponsor, because of our partnership with some commercial company. So that is a big challenge.
Whatever challenges might lie ahead, Eric is confident his appointment can help to overcome them. It's worth noting that everyone we spoke to for this episode, on the record and off, spoke highly of his approach. Eric's knowledge of the sport and innate understanding of the value of the race organiser's contribution holds the key to closer working relationships, he believes.
The key thing for my role is the communication. The organisers now feel there's someone they can talk to, there's someone they can pick up the phone to any time of day, you know, to discuss things, discuss issues, what's going wrong, what problems they might have, or what's going well and what they're happy with, and knowing there's one point of contact. And I certainly won't have the answers to everything. If it's a discussion about rights or something like that around the race, then I can have that discussion with them, but ultimately I'll also go and ask someone else and say, you know, we've got this issue that's cropped up, what can we do about it? And I think also I bring another side to it, rather than just a, you know, quite straight-faced, well, that's it, take it or leave it. I also understand the history of the sport and the need to keep these races, so I can maybe come at it a little bit more of a softer approach and say, well, you know, what could we do to maybe help out in this area? Or is there any way we can have a bit of leeway here? Because, you know, this race has got like 20 years history behind it that we need to maintain. And I think that's where the bike racing sort of background and history can come into play, more so than if this job was given to someone that just understands the commercials or something like that. So I think that's the element, the communication and the understanding and the knowledge of the race as well.
It's heartening to hear about Eric's approach and the response it's generated from organisers like Peter Harrison, one of many who believe that Eric is doing a good job. Can more be done, however, to lift some of the huge burden currently resting on the shoulders of these volunteers? Not only must they raise tens of thousands of pounds in sponsorship and secure the agreement of police and councils for road closures, they must do so seemingly single-handed. Little wonder, then, that events come and go from the National Road Series calendar. Has the job simply grown too big for even the most dedicated volunteer? Here's Larry again.
I certainly just couldn't step into someone like Peter Harrison's shoes or Bob Howden's or Mark Etch's. You mentioned the cost of putting on the Beaumont. Even the cost of putting on a crit like Newcastle was 40-odd grand. It's an awful lot of money, so you do need someone who has a really good business acumen and good networking skills to be able to bring the money in to be able to do that. So essentially, I guess it does need to be almost like a professional organisation, i.e. it almost needs a business manager and an organiser who has the skills and experience to be able to deal with all the different bodies that one needs to deal with to put a bike race on. And let's face it, you know, you've got your local councils, British Cycling, etc., etc., the police, so many different bodies that you need to be able to deal with. I've always thought that companies like Sweet Spot, we do need more of them to be able to put on events, to put on a Premier Calendar Series, for example. But whether or not they would have the same feeling and passion that one of the events put on by the likes of Bob Howden or Peter Harrison, I'm not sure. The influence that Brother UK has had on teams, for example, is absolutely huge. And they also did put money and a great deal of help into an event on the Isle of Man called the British National Road Race Championships. But we don't actually have any of those blue chip companies sponsoring events to keep the National Series events on the road. At the moment, the National Series events in both men and women is still a mishmash of privateers putting on events that may or may not actually get held due to finance. If, for example, there was an organisation that came in to organise all 6 or 10 events for both men and women, and they had a big blue chip company sponsoring it, I think it would look and feel a lot more professional, a lot more like the Tour of Britain or the Tour de Yorkshire, as they do on the road.
Anyone who knows Larry knows that he bows to no one in his admiration for British cycle sports volunteer race organisers. But if he can see that professional organisers are needed to create events that look and feel professional, why can't others? The Tour Series, for example, rolls on year after year, with televised coverage and the best domestic teams committed to competing in every round. Is it time for the National Road Series to adopt the same organisational model? Eric Rousel believes not, and argues that comparing the Tour Series and the National Road Series isn't exactly comparing apples with apples.
The National Road Series has got hugely, hugely different challenges to something like the Tour Series. The two are almost, in my opinion, almost uncomparable. The Tour Series is commercially run. It's run by a commercial company with commercial sponsors and backing. The Road Series is almost the polar opposite. It's volunteer-based, with much smaller companies sponsoring, you know, the individual events, and relies heavily on local authorities down to the smallest detail of whether it's harvest period or not, if one of these races can take place. So we could try and dictate exactly what we want, but ultimately it's volunteer run, and you can't necessarily always get what's perfect in those that situation, in that model. You wouldn't want to lose those volunteer based races and what they provide to the sport. You wouldn't want to create something higher up to then create a bigger gap below it. That's the key, is working it in a way that we keep what we've currently got, because a lot of what we've got is good. You know, the bike races are good. They're really highly contested. Riders like riding them. They often get full entries. And so they are good bike races. We just need to develop them and potentially work out a way of how that could be combined into something a little bit more commercial going forward that would suit everybody. I wouldn't agree that we want to go completely away from a volunteer-based model at all. It's just working out how we develop what we've currently got to provide. At the end of the day, this all boils down to what riders and what teams need and what we want to provide for them. You know, we're not doing it for our own ego or for an organiser's ego or for someone to say, I've put on a national race. If it's not working for the bike rider and the team, then what's the point in doing it? That's what it ultimately comes down to. So we've got to work with what works for our riders and for our teams and for our members. And if we've got something that doesn't quite work for them, then we need to shake it up and change it a bit. That's my opinion.
Perhaps both Eric and Larry are right. It would be impossible to create events with the character and heritage of races like the Cycle Classic and the Beaumont Trophy without the passion of volunteers like Peter Harrison and Colin Clues. And yet it cannot be right that these same volunteers must dip into their own pockets to keep the show on the road. With the blue chip backers that Larry rightly calls for likely to be in shorter supply than ever, for reasons we've already discussed, is it time for the Federation to seek additional funding? Phil Jones believes so. No one, Phil argues, is getting rich by putting on domestic bike races.
Something needs to be done, because of course it's vital that things like the talent pipelines for athletes continue to roll. And of course there's the Olympics on the horizon, and of course they've got to start thinking about the next Olympic cycle, and they are constantly looking for new talent to bring into the medal factory and onto the elite program, etc., etc. So that needs to keep going. So I guess the job there is for the Federation to represent itself to government, to convince government to somehow perhaps give that a short-term injection of some kind in order that it can at least bridge over the most difficult time, which is probably going to be the period in the coming 12 months. If you'd look at this through clear eyes, what you'd actually say is there a sort of commercial model sitting behind this, is where race organisers are all making a fortune and therefore it should be sort of left to the market to see whether they survive or not? And my answer to that is I don't see any sort of multi-millionaire race organisers rolling around the country on the profits that they make from the races. From what I can see, most people are walking away with break even or a very small margin, and they're normally people who are highly committed to the sport, and the cost of putting the race on in terms of the other things that they're doing, there's also a huge amount of free resource being put into putting a race on alongside the costs that get covered by the attraction of a sponsor.
The complexities of bike racing do not begin and end with tactics on the road. Indeed, it might be argued that chasing down a breakaway is easier than chasing down a sponsor, and that riding a race is less demanding than organising one. It's the speed and excitement, the suffering and heroism that makes bike racing such a compelling show, of course, but it doesn't hurt occasionally to peek behind the curtain and understand the workings of its commercial and organisational machinery. The National Road Series should be the ladder by which talented young riders climb to the professional ranks. to add rungs and to extend it, to strengthen it and to secure it, will take a combined effort from riders, teams, sponsors, organisers and, most of all, the Federation, British Cycling. Of all the guests featured in this episode, National Road Series manager Eric Rousell arguably has the toughest task. Let's leave the final word, until part two at least then, to Eric. A former professional rider, he's used to digging deep. To win the hearts and minds of a community grown tired of folding races and disappearing teams, he'll have to do so again. Unsurprisingly, for a rider with Monument Classics on his palmarès, he's up for the fight.
The key thing in British Cycling choosing to appoint me for this role is that, you know, being an ex-bike rider myself and having come from these races and done them all, that I do have a passion for cycling. I do have a passion for these specific races as well and the future of the sport. And that is hugely key. I mean, I've only been there, 8 months now? And it does take a knock from time to time when you sometimes log on to Twitter or something like that and you read the comments, British Cycling aren't doing this, or they don't know what they're talking about, or they don't understand bike racing, etc., etc. It's a bit disheartening. I think anyone that says I don't understand bike racing needs to, you know, maybe have a look at my background or something first, because I certainly do understand bike racing and I've certainly got a lot of passion for it, and I think I always will do for as long as I have this job.
We'll end this episode in our normal manner with a social shout out. If you want to follow any of our expert witnesses on social media, you can do so with these addresses. Eric Rousell is on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Rousell, all one word. You can follow Jonathan Durling on Twitter at jdurling1970 and on Instagram at MarlaVello, MARLA underscore Vello. Larry Hickmott tweets from at AussieLarry and at VelloUK. On Instagram, you can follow him at VelloUK website, all one word. Peter Harrison is on Twitter and Instagram at Cyclone Festival, all one word. Phil Jones posts about cycling from at Road Phil on Twitter and Instagram. For Phil's tweets on business and leadership, follow at PhilJones40. And we sincerely hope you'll follow Brother Cycling. We're at Brother Cycling on all three platforms. Thanks very much indeed for listening. Be sure not to miss the second part of this episode and stay safe.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.